Welcome to Playful Beginnings, a podcast about the magic of play therapy for therapists, students, and anyone interested. In our podcast, we'll explore the deeper understanding of play therapy and the skills we use when working with children.
We hope to help you understand the why behind what we do and how it helps kids heal and grow. I'm Dr. Christy Opiola, a working play therapist and university professor in North Carolina.
I'm Maggie Parker, a play therapist and a professor in Virginia. Well, hey, Christy.
Hey, Maggie.
In addition to knowing like the themes of toys that you need, there's a lot more that goes into setting up a playroom. And I think you and I have had a lot of experience in multiple different types of settings, like agencies, community clinics, private practices, schools. And so maybe we can talk about like what would be our ideal playroom, things to consider, and then when you're in a space that's not your own, how you kind of manage the messiness of play in a space that's not your own.
Yes.
Because I think that happens. Well, at least for me, that happens a lot. I'm like, oh, geez.
This is currently happening for me.
Can't wait to hear all that.
Thinking about play space, like this has been written about, like what is the ideal playroom look like? My experience is I've never worked in an ideal playroom, but I think if I had my choice, you know, I'd love it to follow ideal play space. So Landreth in his book, The Art of the Relationship, gives some like ideals of what would be helpful in a playroom. And I don't know if we want to start there, just kind of talking about what's suggested and then what does reality look like?
Yeah.
And so I know he suggests like a 12 by 15 foot room, right? So 150 to 200 square feet is the ideal size for a playroom. It is interesting. You don't want a playroom too big, right? And you don't want a playroom too small. They both bring challenges to it. Too big of a playroom, it's hard to be in connection with kids. And too small of a playroom, it's hard for kids to have moments to be by themselves because they're literally within arm reach of you at any given second. And so I do think there's a happy medium between the two.
And there are ways that you and I and others have created spaces when the room was too big to, you know, whether it be a classroom and we move shelves a certain way.
Yeah, or that you're in a conference room. Mm-hmm. Right, with a big table in the middle and you're trying to work around what the big table looks like because there it does sometimes feel like because we come with stuff, right, like all the toys and stuff, that sometimes people don't know where really to place us in agencies and private practices and schools. So there is some advocating we have to do on our part to make sure, but sometimes I think we also appreciate the opportunity of space, and so we'll figure out how to make it work. I personally like either a square or a rectangle best, but I've also been in an L shape and just have to strategically think where to put my therapist self in that space so I can see all parts of the room, bottom part of the L, where it, so that I can see either to the left or to the right. But yeah, it really depends. That famous statement we all love so much, it depends and trust the process.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's also something for listeners who are kind of going into this, whether it be counseling or play therapy, there's a lot of ambiguity. And so we can give parameters and there's not always a script. And so buckle up because you're going to have to really, you can make informed choices. Yeah. And I think that an intentional choices, but there's just a lot of ambiguity. So, you know, these are things that both the book and what I think are helpful. And we'll also share some of the modifications because this isn't always the way it is. So
yeah, it's not always the reality that we're faced with.
Right.
I also think this gives us an opportunity to use our creativity and our flexibility in the moments. But I think there are some interesting things to be thoughtful of when we're thinking about space. I know we trained in a center where there was actually a bathroom in the playroom, which is just wild to me thinking about it today, that there could be a bathroom in the playroom and how that really afforded kids space. They didn't have to leave the playroom because I don't know about for you, but so many of my kids are fearful if we leave that they won't be able to come back. And so that can be distressing for them. But, you know, like having running water in the playroom is ideal, but if you don't have it, it's not a deal breaker.
Right.
You know, you just get a little Tupperware container that you put some water in.
And I think there can be a whole episode where we talk about kids and bathrooms and the
Oh, yeah.
playroom. But I have found like it was very nice having a bathroom in the playroom. It was
Or close by.
strange or close
Like,
by.
I like it close by. It's not in the playroom. I just think there's like a liability issue with it being in the playroom
I
in
think a
today's
lot
day and
was,
age.
yeah, I think a lot was afforded to us when we were in school and that was there because we were always being recorded. And so there's a safety in that that I don't know I would feel if that was not the case. Where I've struggled in a playroom recently was it was locked. The bathroom was locked and you had to go down the hall. So you had to get the key. And if someone else had the key, then you had to wait. And kids have to go to the bathroom. And that was
And they don't
really
tell us until they
tough.
have to go to the bathroom.
And I think that
It's not
happens
like they're
too.
giving us warning.
No. And I'm trying to hold back because I think this could be a whole episode of going to the bathroom. But it is nice to be able to have a restroom nearby. And again, also the water. And the water can be used in so many different ways. You know, it can be used for the baby bottle, for nurturing, or, you know, whatever. There's so many different
Dumping in the
things.
sandbox.
They love to dump it in the sand. And so when we didn't have a sink nearby, I would just use the filtered water thing. And I'm like, okay, let's go. And so you just see us. And it's awkward when you have to leave the room and parents are like, what are you guys doing? So if you can have water nearby, I do think it's really helpful. And it helps with
Yeah, I
cleaning.
agree. It makes cleaning a lot quicker. The other thing I was thinking about is just what the floor looks like. I know we talked about this a little bit, but having some type of floor covering or best is, hardwood tile, laminate, because then messiness is not an issue because kids are messy. But if I do have hardwood or floor, I do put a rug in the room because I also think they need comfort.
Yeah, I
And
think
sometimes that
that
doesn't come.
having something that's like soft, and it doesn't have to be like a plush, like I wouldn't suggest a shag carpet because that's going to get real
Oh, I
dirty
have
and
a shag
gross.
carpet
Do you
in my
really? How does
room.
it
I
work?
do. The
Okay,
kids
tell
love
us.
it. The
Really?
kids
I
love it. Now,
guess.
the sandbox is not on the shag carpet. I have a tile floor, so it's like cold and kind of sterile. But so I did put a shag carpet in there, and it's off to the side, kind of over by where my shelves are, so that kids can, like have a little play area. And it works great for most things, but it doesn't really work great for like the army men or for some things to stand up on. So the hardwood floors. But I found it more, kids want to spend more time on a shag carpet than they do just a regular carpet. But I also learned to put padding under it so that it's kind of like a softer place to land, especially on like a tile floor. It's
Yeah.
really hard and it's really cold.
So cold.
So it's, like that's that sterile feel to it. But you do what you have to do with the space that you have and what's afforded to you.
And I've had carpet in the last couple playrooms that I've been. And it's not nice carpet, you know, it's office building carpet. And that's easier because you can brush the sand up. You don't always have to vacuum because it's hard to vacuum in between sessions if you have them back to back. So you can kind of like brush it up really quick. And I'll do like the running man over it to kind of like really grind it in. but it's not terrible. But then I think about, okay, what can I put underneath? If paint gets on the floor, right? So I get some of those plastic office things that we talked about before, and because then it's easy to wipe up. And I've had spaces where I think you and I might have shared a client at one point, and they loved putting bubbles on the floor. And that's hard to get out of carpet. So, you know, it's like your
Well, it just
limits
stays
are going to
wet for a
be.
while.
Yeah, it's going to be. So it's just kind of like figuring out your comfort level. I think we were afforded a really great opportunity when we were first learning because the walls were like cinder block and painted.
So it was quiet and
And we would just wipe and it was quiet.
but I do like, I've seen people use like plexiglass behind the easel as just another like barrier and like protective barrier. And I do like that. Like, I think it makes it much easier for cleanup because kids will do the darndest thing. And for some reason, everywhere that people have done that, the easel's in a corner. right? So then you just do the front and the side corner, and then the easel's, you know, facing one of those. But if they splatter on the side or they splatter where behind the easel, that that wall is protected.
And I think a lot of kind of what we're talking about, and I think it might be helpful to explicitly state too, is that when you are in the playroom, you want to have materials and furniture protectors, whatever it is, to make sure that you are able to stay with the child and aren't in your head about, oh no, there's paint. The paint's on the wall. Yeah. The paint's here, right? Or, oh my gosh, the toy might break. And so I think that's an important thing, is as we are exploring and deciding on how to set up the playroom, not just thinking about how is this easily accessible to children, also how are we going to be able to be present in this moment? Because if I buy a $600 kitchen, I may not be able to be as present if they need to hammer that or whatever it is that they need to do.
Right. And also be accepting of the child, right? Like
right.
how can we hold unconditional positive regard if the child's doing something based on how we set up the room, right? Sometimes we need to kind of be thoughtful of, are there things that I could preemptively do, you know, like preventatively to make sure that I can still maintain some acceptance for this child who's coming to us because they're having a hard time, you know? And so they're not always going to be the most well-behaved or follow every direction. Kiddo in that moment more because they're learning self-regulation skills. They're learning how to get their needs, desires, wants met in ways that are more acceptable by society and people. So
and I think, you know, sometimes they're, especially in, you and I work a lot with kids who've experienced trauma or attachment stuff, and so they're kind of seeing, are you still going to accept me? And so when I think about what I bring into the playroom, the first thing, like, you know, comes to mind are like Play-Doh and glitter. I'm going to really struggle if there's glitter everywhere. And I know that. And so I'm like, you know what? It's probably not the best thing for me to bring in because of who I
am.
Do
you call glitter what it is?
Nasty? What?
No, the STI of craft supplies. Glitter glue, everyone. Glitter glue is a
glitter
great tool.
Glue. Oh, it helps.
It's not like free glitter. No, glitter's just challenging. Once kids use it, just know it's going to sparkle all over your playroom. Even if they don't remove it from the art section, it just somehow, you know, finds legs to walk all over your playroom.
It really does. And then you're going to have glitter in your hair for the next 3 days.
Yeah, you'll sparkle. Yeah, so will the kid. You know, it's not a bad tool. Kids really love glitter.
They do.
Which is why I use glitter glue instead of real glitter. And I'd rather use sequins or something else that they can, you know, splatter on, or gem, little teeny gems.
And I think
so they get the same thing.
I think that's what's really important, is you have to really explore, how can this be used?
Yes.
What's going to keep me from connecting with this child? Will it keep me from connecting with this child? And then what are alternatives that will allow the same opportunity for the child, but also keep me connected and accepting? So it's not just this willy-nilly, let's buy toys. It's a very thinking about emotional expression. There's a lot that goes into it.
Well, I think it's the logistic of the space, right? Because the other thing we haven't talked about yet is, like, there's a whole science to the color of walls you choose, right? Like how you paint your walls, if you have the choice to paint your walls.
Lighting.
Are you going to hang things in your space? What does the lighting look like? Like, all of that is something to be thoughtful of. If you don't like fluorescent lights, you know, if you put lamps up, what does that look like? How safe are the lamps? Do you have furniture that supports having lamps in your playroom? And then, right, like, is there anything you need to be thoughtful of about how kids are using certain materials around lamps? All that stuff are all components that you want to think through before you bring a kid into the playroom. Yeah, and then there's also, you know, as much as I love the list you'll find at, like, in Landra's book or some of the other books, you know, some of them were written at a time that kind of dates them. You know, like, we don't use chalkboards anymore. So finding, although chalkboards are great, kids don't even know what they are. But, you know, to have a grease board or some other type of board in the room where they could freely write, I think is important. Having a mirror hanging up, Kids like to watch themselves. You know, they can be big hams sometimes, and they can have some real concerns
No, I
about their
agree.
appearance or the way they look. So I think those are things that often we don't think about when we're setting up a playroom that are important components to add. And then also, if you do a mirror, like what type of mirror is it? Is it a kid-friendly mirror? Are you buying just a regular mirror? What if for some reason it shatters? Like, are you thoughtful about how you're going to clean it up? Do you have materials to clean it up? And the list goes on and on and on.
I think about that too, even with shelving. Wanting
Oh,
to have,
shelving's a good one to talk about.
really sturdy shelving because kids really like to climb and kids can become dysregulated and maybe, so I try and get as sturdy and if I can secure it to the wall, that's what I really want because I don't want something to happen where it falls on a child or they become dysregulated and they pull it down and then it breaks and then their response to that. And I think, you can work through it if you have the opportunity to have really sturdy, it's more expensive, but I think it's a good investment.
I agree. The other thing I would, when we're talking about shelves, and this may just be a me thing. I don't know how you feel about it. I don't like the shelving that's cubbies.
No, I don't like cubbies
I like
either.
open shelves.
Yes.
Cubbies just, it splits the materials up in funny ways. And I think it forces us to use baskets to like kind of organize. And I just don't always think that facilitates easy play and expression for kids. So I actually like a just a traditional open shelf. I prefer wood over metal. And then I love space. I typically only like a two or three shelf. I'm really mindful of how high the shelf is. I don't want it where a kid can't reach or they'll end up climbing the shelf. And so I do think about those things when I'm putting kind of my materials in to make sure that it's, meeting the needs of every kid that I'm working with, the biggest and the smallest.
And
And
I
I don't want
think
something out of the reach of someone where they feel like, because they're going to
it's
be really enticed to want to use it. And I don't want to have to set a limit on, well, those materials aren't for you.
And I think that's, I have been in two spaces. I've been in multiple places where I wasn't able to create the playroom, where I came in and they created it for me, or they purchased the shelves that I did not want, even though I told them which ones I wanted, right? And so you make it work, and there are different ways in which I've tried to make it work. So if it's too high, I might be like, okay, you can choose for me to pick that. And I put a stool in so that they could reach it if they wanted. So try to like address it in that way. And then with the cubby shelves, it did make it really hard to organize. So things were sectioned off in ways that perhaps didn't go the way I wanted them to, or that because of the cubby system, I had to put a bunch of stuff in, one and not the other. And it just made it really complicated, but I did the best that I could to create the toys in those themes. And I would, because they'd want to climb on them or move them. And so I'd always just be, if I set the limit and they didn't, it's like, okay, I'm choosing, I would stand up and hold. These aren't for climbing on and kind of setting those limits, but knowing ahead of time, I'm going to have to set these limits and I'm going to have to sometimes use my body to create safety because they were not safe. Like they were going to topple right over. And that's hard, but I was aware that that was going to have to happen. And so I was ready and it was not ideal, but we made it work. And I still think kids were able to get what they needed out
Yeah,
of the
this it's not that
space.
you if you have them, they're not usable. I think you waste a lot of space or things get clumped together that you don't really want to clump together when you have the like cubbied, which they sell everywhere nowadays with those cute little baskets that go in them. They're just, for me, they don't make play very accessible for kids. They spend more time sorting through stuff than they do getting to play. And so my goal is, that they can utilize the whole 45, 50 minutes of session, 53 minutes, whatever you need to do for insurance, where they can play.
One thing that you and I have talked about that's different than what the Landreth book indicates is the use of like tents. We talked a little bit about it before. And so I had a tent in my space and I'm like, this takes up so much room and blah, blah, blah. And they loved it. it was an opportunity to kind of, if they needed space alone, that they could do that. It became a puppet theater. It became a hide and seek. And so I, you know, it's something that's not on the list, and it's kind of coming more and more into the spaces. And I'd love your perspectives on it. I know we've talked about it before, but.
Yeah, I do find the tent helpful. I work with a lot of kids who have difficulty in forming relationships. And so I think it's a space that they can go into, like, to separate and still be in space with me as the therapist. And again, they can use it as like the puppet theater, or as it can be a home, or they can do mastery play in there before they show it to you outside of the play space. And I've had lots of, my kids have opened up a lot while they're in the tent instead of being out. I have an A, so I used to have, I think what we would call like a traditional kids tent, and now I have an A-frame tent. So it's just a old school, what you would think of camping A-frame tent. And oh my gosh, my kids love it. And it has a window in it, which is really cool, so they can look out. Yeah. And sometimes if I have to choose one over the other, like, I love a puppet theater, but I absolutely adore puppets. But I think I might choose a tent over a puppet theater. But I think I've seen kids do the same thing behind a puppet theater that they do in a tent. But we often, behind a puppet theater, will make, you know, soft spaces. So, you know, like, I'll have a beanbag chair or some type of fluffy thing that they can kind of nestle into, a big teddy bear or something back there that kind of facilitates the same thing a tent. But I do think kids really benefit from having a space where they can escape into, environment for kids where they can be creative, or they can use it as like a safe, secure place where they can kind of separate themselves from you in that moment if they need a moment to themselves. And I think that's important to create in your space, and to be comfortable with what's in there and what's behind there. Kids need that sometimes in relationship with us. Sometimes they need to master things before they show it to us. Sometimes they need some separation because their feelings are hurt. I've also seen them be used as like separate houses. So like, I'm over here and you're over there, and then they can role play things that they experience in their real lives. And so all that shows up when you have a tent or a puppet theater in your playroom.
I think another thing to consider too is sometimes we're put in spaces that are also used like multi-purpose.
By other therapists.
So there may be a couch or chairs, and I thinking ahead of like, are you okay if they jump on the couch? If not, how are you going to try and separate this?
You know what I did? Because I've had this happen, or they put paint, or they, you know, spill something on the couch, and then I'm like really mindful. I do a waterproof fitted sheet.
Oh,
that I put around the couch, so the couch can still be there. It can still be a place of comfort, but I'm protecting the fabric so that them jumping on it or whatever. Because I've also had kids use the couch as like a fort building opportunity, and needing like a battle between you and them. They can do that in the playroom too, but sometimes they just needed, you know, different materials to be able to do that. And so if I'm in a space with a couch, I find that's what it gets used for.
And like the couch cushions are used sometimes for forts, or like the floor is lava. I love that game.
And you can jump.
So fun.
Whatever you choose, they need to be sturdy. So like if you do a tent, it needs to, you have to be mindful of like the sturdiness of the tent. You can't buy a $5 one from Aldi. I mean, they're beautiful and they're cute, but they're just, know they're going to break. So you either need to buy a few, or they fall apart, or fabric rips. Yeah. So whatever you buy, you need sturdy. Same with the puppet theater. Like, it needs to be sturdy enough. I've had kids climb the puppet theaters before if they're sturdy.
And I think same
scale
with
it.
Yeah. And same with the sandbox. Like, ideally, if you can have all of these things that are like sturdy wood, I think that's really helpful. Big enough, like for the sand tray too, like big enough to get in. And then something to think about is like, if they're climbing the puppet theater and they fall, are they going to hit their head on the sandbox? Like, how are you positioning things? I think is
important. And I think you need to make a priority list, like what's most important to you. So if I asked you, Maggie, of the things, you know, of the equipment that you want in your playrooms, of how many shelves you would want to, if you want a sandbox, a puppet theater, a tent.
At least two
shelves.
What
would be your top two? Okay.
Oh, top two?
No. Okay. Just tell them in order of what you would want.
Okay. You need shelves, sturdy shelves, an art table.
Yep.
A sandbox. or something that holds sand, right? Like even if it's a sand tray and you can't move it, or I'll move the sand tray down onto the floor, and a kitchen. And then one that we haven't talked about that is really important to me is a wheelie chair for me to sit on. Yeah. Because when you, I think if there's only couches for you to sit in, it, one, I tend to get really comfortable, and the more comfortable I am, the more sleepy I get. And not that I want to be uncomfortable, but I want to be like the chair I'm sitting in, you know, it's like a straight back, I'm focused. And when it wheels, then you have the opportunity, you know, you can say like, I'm choosing to come closer so I can see what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And you don't get that opportunity if you're in a couch or an armchair. And I also don't want to sit on the floor because the child hasn't necessarily invited me to play yet. And so I feel like that's almost like encroaching on them and their space. And so I think a wheelie chair is so helpful. And even like I had small spaces to go around and I just kind of like eat through.
Wiggled quickly.
Yeah. What about you?
Yeah. I would say two shelves are important so that you can have both. So your aggressive and nurturing toys can be separated. And some of that is dependent on the size of your room, but I don't think I've ever been in a space that I don't have at least two shelving units. I don't think you need more than three, but I like your art table idea. Nothing big, child size, you know, enough to hold a few sheets of paper and some markers and maybe a small container of different materials.
Huge tub of glitter.
A huge tub of glitter. Yeah. That's always priority on my list. My head is shaking no. A sandbox, I think, is really important. And I've even done a Rubbermaid container, like an under the bed Rubbermaid container when I don't really have space for a sandbox.
You're so good.
A dollhouse is really important to me. And a big dollhouse, not a little teeny one. So I often have both a big and a small dollhouse in my playroom because many of the children we see today are navigating between two family systems. So they're going either from mom to dad's house, or maybe something happened to a previous house and they moved or something like that. So having like a small dollhouse and a big dollhouse is helpful. A puppet theater. I think the wheelie chair is important. I don't think it's the most important thing to me, but it's important. I tend to sit in a chair, and I'm mindful. I'm 6 feet tall, so I'm really tall for kids. And so, you know, sometimes a kid-sized chair is really hard to sit in for 15 minutes repetitively through the day. Like my body revolts and I need to do yoga or something to stretch myself out. And I think and a puppet theater would be on there for me, or a tent. Both take up a lot of space. So I think you have to pick. And an easel. I think an easel is really important too.
Is it as hard though?
So we listed everything that we said
all
we
of it.
Mm-hmm. But like sometimes the things that go are like the puppet theater and the tent will go first for me if I had to get rid of something because I didn't have space for it.
But I think what's really important that we're both kind of sharing is knowing ourselves and being really intentional and recognizing while you want a certain kind of chair and you're mindful of your body, I'm also mindful
of my body.
But I also
want it to be low enough to be at the child's level. So like, that's the other thing, you know, like it's not okay to sit in a big chair where I power over a child. Like I want to be down on their level. I just know the toll that takes on my body.
Yeah.
When I'm seeing 6 clients or 7, 8 clients a day like that, my body does start to ache a little bit. And all of that.
So I think it's just important. And I hope that there are so many, what I hope our listeners hear is that you and I think both are very, I think you're an excellent play therapist. I'm fine. And I'm
a good play therapist. You're also excellent.
But we have different opinions on some things and that's okay. Yeah. And we were trained in the same spot and we're really mindful of multiple things. We're holding multiple things and are intentional in what we do. And I think that's really an important message for people who are listening. And I think, I know we're kind of out of time and maybe we can talk about how we decide which toys to purchase and why next time and how.
I think that would be great. Because I think that's an important, like, what are your guidelines for purchasing materials? What things do you look out for? What don't you? I'm currently working on a new playroom. So I've been in the thick of material finding and it can be expensive.
It can be.
Right. So how do you, like, maybe we need to talk about what is our base set and then what do we build up from? That might be a good thing for us to talk about too.
Okay. Love it.
Okay.
Well, I hope this was helpful. And it was great to talk to you again.
I know. I hope this was helpful for our listeners and just points for you guys to ponder.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I'll see you later. Bye guys. Have a great day.